Guys, give it up for the Vineyard Sound. I insisted on an acapella game for tonight. Thank you guys so much. That was awesome. Take a bow. Guys, the Vineyard Sound. Thank you, guys. Hi, guys. Welcome to the late show at the Beacon. Guys came out on a cold night. How you guys doing up there? How's things in the mezzanine? And the people who bought tickets first. Guys, this is our special Thanksgiving episode. And tonight, we wanted to step back, given the fact that it has been a year since we made one of our biggest mistakes in history. So, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about what Trump is doing, what he tweeted in Asia, and I don't know if you saw, but it's terrible for the huge. But tonight we wanted to talk a little bit more about the forces undergirding what made Trump possible. And to me, from the way that Trump and his followers have exploited race to social media to reality TV, one topic that seems to unite them all is shamelessness. And that is going to be the theme of tonight's show. Including the fact that many politicians have noticed, as of late, that you can get away with more than they ever thought possible. So we've got a packed show, and I want to bring out our panel to get into it. She is a comedian, host of the Last Name Basis podcast, and MTV's Decoded. Please welcome Francesca Ramsey. Hi. He is a Tony and Grammy award-winning actor, rapper, and producer. Please welcome David Dix. And he is the host of Bravo's Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen. Please welcome Andy Cohen. The Beacon is a fan of you guys.
Come back and see me and Anderson Cooper in January, kids.
Already plugging. What a pro. You know, some people say that I'm an Andy Cohen type.
You know what? That's anti-Semitic. I'm offended. I'm outraged.
Maybe like, what are you, like 60% anti-Semitic, 40% homophobic? What
yeah,
are you?
Right. Yes. Yes.
But I'm fine with it.
I would be an Andy Cohen type, except I don't have a weave or like a studded bustier. I need to like clap in someone's face or something. I could do it if you wanted.
I mean, I'll jump in on it. Fuck
yeah.
It.
Yeah. We could have a fight.
Very loose. Not totally following all of it. Let's get into it. What a society. So, tonight I want to talk a little bit about the forces that led to Trump. And, you know, we can talk about race, we can talk about social media, we can talk about polarization. But one aspect of this I do think sometimes gets short shrift is the role that reality TV culture played a little bit.
You know what? I'm immediately regretting this. You're
no.
Gonna blame me for the whole fucking thing.
No.
I am not taking this on. I just want you to know.
Honestly,
it's not my fault.
I'll start with you, Francesca.
Thank you.
It's not my fault. Yeah, I mean, I do think to, as much as it pains me to say anything positive about 45, he knows how to speak in a sound, you know, in a sound bite, and he has like little catchphrases, and I feel like definitely people loved that about him. And he also said that he loves an uneducated person. Yeah, so I mean, he has capitalized on being able to speak in these little sound bites and quips and have like little chants and like really boil down things to the lowest common denominator. And so
emphasis on lowest.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, the thing that I think about is like I think about the line that everyone now makes. It's become such a cliche, but you know, I didn't come here to make friends, and because what always to me that was about was like, I don't need you to like me. I don't need to play by the rules. I'm here to win. I'm here to get something, and getting that thing. Basically, to me, it's about, you know, you could divide the world into people who do the right thing and people who do the wrong thing, but I'm not here to make friends. I'm dividing the world into winners and suckers. And I don't think that's something that reality TV hit upon as something that was kind of roiling in our culture long before Trump. And it feels like some of the mistrust that people had that led to Trump is something that he's exploiting when he goes on television and says, I know how the system works. You know, that's why only I can fix it. Or, you know, I've been in these fundraisers. I know what these weasels do, right? To me, that speaks to him harnessing, ultimately, what like turning this into a reality TV show. I mean, Andy, I don't know what you think about that. I wasn't bringing you on as a representative of it, so much as an expert.
Thank you. No, but you're right. He communicates in a way that is completely new. And it is this weird combination of totally no bullshit, but everything he says is bullshit. But the way that he says it appeals to people because they think that he's being real. And, you know, I've looked at him for the last 2 years and said, this guy is, and just go there with me, he's like a season one Real Housewife who
wanted her own spinoff.
Well, what'd you say?
Who like wants her own spinoff?
Oh no, they all want their own spinoff. but no, he's like a season one housewife who, first of all, hasn't figured out her hair and makeup at all, because it's usually season two or three for some where they really get it together. But also, he will do or say anything to stay on the show. And that is, you know, someone who is grasping like, oh, no, I don't want to get fired. Like, no, I'm going to say this. And now what do you think? And the crazy thing is that he has stayed on the show. I mean, that's what I am aghast that he's still on the show. I would have fired him a long time ago. Trust me. Trust and believe.
I'm mostly just trying to figure out what his hair looks like if he gets a season two.
You know what? I mean, I have ideas.
Yeah. even really early on, I as soon as he sort of popped up, like saying he was going to really run for this thing, I got very nervous because I'm from California and we had Arnold Schwarzenegger as a like, it's hard to beat somebody on the TV. That's what I was saying for years. Like, this motherfucker's on the TV. It's hard. It's a very difficult thing when you come into the game with that kind of name recognition that is outside of the normal realm, the normal scope of politics. And yeah, we're still paying the price.
Well, that's true. And so, you know, we're all in New York City. Get ready for Mayor Frankel, because Bethany Frankel now, he has opened it up. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it's like it is anybody's ball game now.
That's terrifying.
Listen, I would argue that Bethany has done more in Puerto Rico than the current administration. And they know that that's true. She's worked her ass off. It's true.
I will say this. Jose Andres runs for something. I'm with Jose Andres.
Right. Well, there you go. Well, right.
I'll follow that guy. I'm also just focusing on the Housewives analogy, and I'm just thinking that, like, we're having this conversation, but right now, somewhere at the summit, Trump just threw Chardonnay in the face of, like,
yes,
of like President Xi.
Yes.
You know?
Well, 100%.
What a twist.
I have been on this tour with Anderson Cooper, and I keep saying to him, like, oh, that was a great Housewives reunion you hosted the other night. He's like, that was a presidential debate. And I'm like, no, dude, you stole my jam. Like, he ended the debate with Hillary and Trump by saying something that I have done in Beverly Hills and New York, which is say something when it is so scorched earth you have nowhere to go. I say, you know what? Say something nice about each other. And that's how he ended the debate in St. Louis, the second debate, because there was nowhere to go. And I texted him after. I go, dude, you stole my fucking jam. That's where we are.
That's where we are, guys. Oh, man.
Thank you.
You gonna run?
You know what? I can't. I don't want to put my past on trial.
I get it.
Although, you know what? If Donald Trump, the biggest freaking creep, forget it. I'm in.
It's why not? Why not? It's like he has 100% liabilities in 100% of areas.
Right. Exactly. Like,
he's
true.
A business criminal. He's a social criminal.
Right.
Yeah.
He's despicable in all of his dealings.
He is a pussy grabber on tape.
I'm saying, have you admitted to raping somebody? Are you a white supremacist? No, I'll vote for you.
Right.
The bar is set way too low.
Right?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, man, we're starting at Andy Cohen. And we're just gonna see if we can beat it, but we don't need to.
Listen,
we don't need to.
We have gotten to the point where I feel that George W. Bush is a respected, you know, it's
how
like,
crazy is that?
This is where we are.
What we're not gonna do is say that.
We're not doing it.
I'm not doing it.
Andy, yeah. I gotta tell you something about this crowd. They picked up hissing.
All right.
wow. Isn't it?
Do your people hiss?
It's so fundamentally unfunny and uncool. And not like, ha ha, they're hissing again. Legit can't stop it. Not only that, it has spread to other shows outside of Crooked Media. And it started at the Love It or Leave It live show in DC a few months ago, like wildfire. It was in the New York Times crossword. I honestly don't know what to do. Part of me wants to just say, all right, you know what? We'll pause the show. We'll do one book burning, and you people can get it out of your system.
Everyone say something nice. Every single person has to go around and do that instead of hiss.
Let's move on to social media. Ugh. What do we think about? So... one thing that I will say is what Trump understood better than the vast majority of politicians is it is better to say what you want and take your lumps for being racist, for being outlandish, or being wrong than to be safe. Like it or not, he believes that that gets his message out there. And what most politicians were doing before 2016 were basically using Twitter as a place to put out press releases. Has Trump's use of social media, has it shown us something about what we want from our politicians? Has it shown us something that other Democrats should emulate, but sans racism, sans lies? What do you think? Francesca, what do you think?
I mean, Trump is a walking meme, and some would argue that that's what won him the election, is that he is really tapped into, like, the trolling. He is a troll. Like, our president is a troll, right? And so it's, I mean, yes, don't clap, don't hiss. He's a troll, and so he really capitalized on all caps and using Twitter to say really ignorant things that really appeal to a lot of trolls and can be memeified. I mean, all of the gifts of him from all of the debates were all over Twitter and just kind of boosted his, you know, him like reaching all of these different people. So I definitely think that social media is what has propelled him, but I don't want to see other politicians using it that way.
I mean, Debbie, what do you think? Isn't there some value to in the wake of Trump, right? Trump has, at one thing, demonstrated that there's fewer costs to saying whatever the fuck you want than we thought, right? Shouldn't Democratic politicians take advantage of that in their own way, finding our own way to just treat it as a place where we say, write what's on our mind, damn the consequences? Is that not right?
Yes. I mean, I think there is something there. I think I would like my president to also be able to speak in more than 140 characters, or 280 now?
280.
You know, 280.
They ruined it.
We bumped it up, so now actually, now Twitter's fine. That's the limit.
We couldn't get rid of the white supremacists, but we got more characters.
We got more characters.
No, priorities.
What was your character limit as a speechwriter? I mean, 280 is a lot. That's a lot.
Oh, man. So many long speeches. In hindsight, they were several thousand times longer than we needed them to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the shame of it.
I do think, I mean, here's the thing about Trump is that, I hate to say that I like this, but what has happened is that by saying exactly what he means, he has drawn a number of lines in the sand. And so, to me at this point, if you support Trump, you also support white supremacy, you know? And it is refreshing, in a way, to be able to say that about a politician, you know, to be able to be like, well, that's what it means if you support this person, so I don't fuck with you, you know? But I do agree with you. There is something to be mined about being a little more open about how you feel about things. But I also do, I think one of the many major crises of this administration is that it has devalued education to the degree that, like, just a show that is a show like this that is smart is a politically left act at this point. And that's crazy. That's actually upsetting in a lot of ways. You know, that like, to me, when I'm looking at scripts these days, I'm like, oh, is there a stupid character in here? And are they celebrated? Because if they are, I don't want to do it. Because that feels really right wing. And that's a little scary. So I look forward to representatives taking this lesson of being open and honest about things, but also still managing to do it in a way that values intellect and education.
And honesty, right? I mean, there's got, you know, Chris Murphy, senator from Connecticut, I think is somebody who's done this really well, because it does feel like it's him and not a press office and not something that's gone through vetting, right? It feels like an honest representation of what he's saying, and I think that's really good. I mean, Andy, what do you think about Trump's use of, I mean, Twitter in a lot of ways is like our own, we're all doing our own little show, right? And Trump's on his own show there.
He's. I mean, again, well, there's a few things. I think that he's brought out the best in, like, Elizabeth Warren, and there are a few other politicians who have become really good on Twitter, and they've realized, wait, he's a troll, I can troll him back, and I can smack him down. So, you know, it's horrible on one level, but on another level, it's actually making some people more relatable. The other thing that he's done really well inadvertently is there's so much criminal activity going on in the White House that all he has to do is send a tweet saying, I have proof that whatever, that he definitely doesn't have proof on, or some ridiculous lie, and that will change the entire media story for the next 24 hours.
I have
and
proof. It'll take Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, did not discover the Northwest Passage.
Right. I mean, you know, and it's taking, so he's very adeptly, and I'm sure that it's not purposefully, but maybe it is, but he's taking the attention off of the things we should be paying attention to. But I really, for the last year and a half, I have been retweeting him and trolling him, desperately trying to get him to block me, and he has not blocked me, but I have been comparing his tweets to tweets of Brandy Glanville and other very active members of the Real Housewives community, and you know, the name calling and the bringing up Housewives from past seasons and bringing up storylines that we're no longer talking about. I mean, it is all very, I am making the juxtapositions on my Twitter feed on an almost daily basis. He refuses to block me, and I don't know. Now I'm convinced that he muted me, and I don't know it.
Oh, the cold, vicious hand of the mute.
I know. By the way, mute is my friend. Mute is anyone's friend. If you ever want to deal with a troll, you mute them and they will never know.
They're that. Shouting into the void.
Are you, are you a muter?
You can also do a soft block. Do you know about a soft block?
No, I do not.
So if somebody is following you and they're like bothering you, you block them and then you unblock them and it unfollows them from you.
Oh, I did not.
So you're just like,
that.
Now you don't even know my business anymore.
Wow. Like, Jessica, I've
soft
done that.
Block.
I was not aware of the soft block.
I've used a soft block.
I do it all the time. People are like, why am I not following you anymore? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know how that happened.
I blocked
soft
you,
block.
Then I unblocked you. Soft
and now
block.
I just mentioned it on a podcast, so now they're all going to know.
Right.
I
blew up my own spot.
I, too, have been thinking about how to get Donald Trump's attention. And I realized that there's really only sort of two ways. One is to be on Fox and Friends or Sean Hannity, which feels like a closed door for me. But... here's my other theory, though, which is he sees what Rosie O'Donnell says about him 100% of the time. And so one of my goals is to get Rosie on this show and have her say something insulting about Donald Trump, and then I'll just dive into frame, and I'll be like, call Schumer, Ryan's fucking you on taxes, you know, just to get something to him, you know, surprise him with some helpful information. Maybe we can stop this repeal of the inheritance tax before it's too late. Seems like we could do that. All right. When we come back, a new game.
Don't go anywhere. This is Love It or Leave It, and there's more on the way.
And we're back. Would anybody like to play a game called whipping out your election victory and showing it to people at inappropriate times? You want to play the game? Okay. You're in the front row, and you just held your arm up perfectly still and just locked eyes with me. Please stand, if you wouldn't mind. What's your name?
Victoria. We met at the opposition the other day.
Okay. Cool. Very aggro, and I like it. Victoria.
Yes, sir.
What brings you to, are you from New York? Where are you from?
I'm Westchester.
From Westchester. Mm-hmm. So, Victoria, here's how this game works. I am going to read to you a quote by Donald Trump, current president, where he is talking about his election victory. And our panelists, Francesca, David, and Andy, are going to read you options for where he said this. Are you ready for your first question?
Yes.
Are you guys ready?
Ready.
Yes.
All right. And we did well. The election. It came out really well. Next time we'll triple it up or quadruple it, right? Where did he say it? Was it?
A, as part of his remarks on African American History Month. I feel like I've been typecast with this answer. A little bit.
B, at an inaugural celebration with campaign staff.
C, outside the door while Mike Pence is trying to use the bathroom in peace for once.
I think it's A.
You got it. You're one for one.
Westchester.
Stop it. Think you're better than Long Island up there? You think you're better than us with your quaint houses? Come to Levittown. You Westchester people, you couldn't cut it on the LIE. The thing goes on forever. Westchester, give me a break. Next thing, somebody will shout New Jersey at me. You're pandering. Yeah, you hiss New Jersey. Next question, Victoria. We had a wonderful election, didn't we? And I saw those numbers, and you like me. And you like me, and I like you. That's the way it worked.
This is making me hate him even more, just hearing.
Yeah, it's part of it.
A, at a Republican campaign rally in Alabama.
B, jogging next to Steve Bannon's car as he leaves the White House for the day.
C, during a speech to senior U.S. military commanders 3 months after the election.
C.
Nailed it. Next question. You know we weren't supposed to do very well in your state, and we won, lost by 1 point. I say if we went there one more visit, we would have won.
A, on a phone call with Minnesota's governor 3 days after the election.
B, in an official White House meeting with county sheriffs from across the U.S.
C, whispered into the ear of a third grader at Duluth Elementary while she was taking a math quiz.
Either A or C.
Oh! Oh, Victoria, you thought you could be funny.
Oh.
you knew it was B.
Oh, okay. B!
Next question. We won by a very, very large electoral college vote.
A joint press conference on covering immigration and foreign relations with Canadian PM Justin Trudeau.
The cat calls for Justin Trudeau.
I love that. That's
amazing.
I love that.
So good.
Justin Trudeau. You know what? I'd be out there with you catcalling myself.
B, during his victory speech on election night.
C, embroidered on the tag of the world's widest red tie.
A.
Nailed it. Do you remember that incredible night with the maps and the Republicans? Are red and the Democrats are blue, and that map was so red it was unbelievable, and they didn't know what to say.
A, wandering the White House in a bathrobe, talking to portraits of presidents he did not recognize.
B, while making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, before sending Barron off to school with a note that said, "I'm proud of you."
C, in a speech at the 2017 Boy Scout Jamboree to a crowd of 40,000 actual children, 9 months after the election.
I'd like to think it's A, but I know it's C.
It is C.
Yes.
He said that in a speech to children, to Boy Scouts. Victoria?
Yes.
You've won.
Yay!
Guys, give it up for Victoria, who has won, whipping out your election victory and showing it to people at inappropriate times. Woo! You get the parachute gift
yes.
card. When we come back, okay, stop. And we're back. Now for a segment we call Okay, Stop. Here's how it works. We roll a clip. When we feel the urge to comment on it, we say, okay, stop, and then we can talk about it. This week, we will be talking about a clip of one Steve Bannon, who...
Stop.
Yeah, we're not fans, guys.
Stop.
We're not fans. He did an interview with the New York Times reacting to Republican losses in Virginia. We'll pause as we go. Let's roll the clip.
We have to go in and get these trade deals to start to take care of the American worker, not just the American company, the American worker.
So there's no doubt, though, that that message of President Trump's has appeal with white nationalists.
Absolutely
is
not.
That that's an unfortunate reality, an unintended consequence?
Okay, stop. What do you got, Andy?
Well, I just wanted to know, are those scabs right here? And what are those from? And also, does he kind of look to anyone like an even more bloated version of Steve Croft from 60 Minutes at all? And is the gentleman who's interviewing him kind of hot?
So anyway, just that's just
three things that were on my mind.
Quick shout out to...
That's not Adam Lambert?
Looks nope, kinda that's like, a quick no? shout out. That
Adam
is
Lambert.
Jeremy Peters of the New York Times. Good compliment for him, yeah. Though I don't think the rest of his questions will get as much favor from the panel.
Why do white nationalists always have such bad skin?
Right.
So I think that there's something fundamental that happens, and I think your insides do start to look like your outsides.
Okay.
And your outsides start to look like your insides. It's like when... It's like when Palpatine goes through his transition, you know? Erin Ryan, a Crooked Media contributor, says that whenever she sees Steve Bannon, all she can think about is the fact that she should drink more water. Just get those 8 glasses.
Yeah, I don't know how you're a supremacist and you look just so awful.
To his point, that absolutely not. This doesn't appeal to. White nationalists? What white nationalists? We never played footsie with white nationalists. I never read a website that I called the platform for the alt-right. That never happened. None of that ever happened. It's just total horseshit.
I think it's nonsense. I think it's nonsense.
You don't think he appeals to them at all?
I think these guys grab onto anything they can. No, the message is one of, this is the guy, the least racist guy I've ever met.
Wait, stop.
Okay, stop. Yeah,
stop.
I mean, wait, who?
Stop.
Donald, is he talking about Donald Trump?
Yes.
The least racist? Like, scroll through his Twitter feed.
So, Francesca.
Sweetie.
That either, I actually think that says less about Donald Trump and more about the kind of people.
He's like, I know way more racist
people.
Yeah,
you're right. If we threw a wig on him, would he look like Mrs. Doubtfire for a second? Could he be a portly nanny that we love? No.
I don't know that. Yeah,
I don't know about him. His bedside manner. And also, he's got those cloudy eyes, which is tough.
Nothing in the campaign and nothing that he's done to date. That's all left wing. That's MSNBC. Nonsense. And by the way, these guys...
Okay, stop. Many fine people on both sides refused to denounce what was happening in Charlottesville, has played footsie with these people the entirety of his administration. They're sending rapists. Everything that he has said... I mean, I feel like there's this weak spot for confident, rich... white guys in this kind of an environment. Like,
this is a new thing?
No, sorry. No, but specifically.
That's kind of been the standard.
I think in every kind of environment.
Right? Fair enough. I was speaking specifically about the fact that this is called crank. This is a person who wasn't taken seriously, but now because of the black swan event of Trump winning, he's now treated like some master strategist, especially in this setting.
Marginalia to marginalia, right? So they'll grab onto anything. And by the way, every time they say Trump's name, MSNBC's got a camera on it, and the New York Times has an article on it, right? Because you're obsessed with it.
So you think it's a media fabric?
Okay, stop. He's the news. Of course he's going to report in the news.
When will these mainstream outlets stop being obsessed with what the president does?
Right.
So 100%. It's 100% media fabrication. And by the way, because they realize that they think the only way they can run is by smearing you to be a nativist, a misogynist, a racist, a homophobe.
But they're chanting his name. They're saying Heil Trump.
He can't help it.
Well, this all bubbled over, as you know, in the most, I think, detrimental way for the president in Charlottesville. Did he handle that right?
I think the president handled it perfectly.
Okay, stop. Cool. I had not seen that. He handled Charlottesville perfectly.
Well, look at the source. I mean,
that's what I was saying, though. Line in the sand, man. You just like, what a fucking nightmare we're living in sometimes, you know? And you can't, it's just, there's no wiggle room at this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, he just makes it so unequivocal.
It was also really uncomfortable when he mentioned the Heil Trump moment, and you see Steve Bannon being like, damn, that was good.
Like, he got me.
He, like, had a brief moment where he was like, and then he, like, tried to recover as if he didn't like that.
Right, like, fair point.
Yeah, it was really weird.
All right, you won that one, but we'll move on to the next one. We need to hold each other close in these times, guys. It feels nice being here. It's nice to be in a place where we feel so, you know.
Oh, that's a nice place to leave it. When we come back, a segment called Ugh, Thanksgiving.
Hey, don't go anywhere. There's more of Love It or Leave It coming up.
And we're back. And now, for a segment called Thanksgiving. And to help me with this segment, please welcome playwright, human rights activist, and director of Don't Feed the Indians, playing now at La Mama Theater in New York. Please welcome Muriel Borsch-Tarrant.
Hello.
Hey! How
Hello.
Are you?
Nice, wild Caucasian.
So, we wanted to spend a few moments ranting about Thanksgiving. And we're going to go back and forth on this topic. We're just going to see where it leads, because it's our Thanksgiving episode, and we thought it would be nice. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
I don't understand why on Thanksgiving we eat dinner at 3:30 p.m.
I don't understand, as a Native American, why I have to be fucking grateful that y'all are here.
It's 4:30 in the afternoon. I've just eaten the biggest meal of the day. Do I eat again? I'm gonna be hungry again.
I don't understand why I get up as an Indian and get up 6 in the morning to make a freaking turkey. Then my family comes home where it doesn't appreciate a goddamn thing because they're all diabetic, because most Indians are diabetic. And then what happens, I have to see the Thanksgiving parade with no Indians in the parade because you don't want to pay nobody.
And what's up with turkey? Why is turkey something we're eating once a year? Why do we all pretend that we love turkey on this one day when it's available to us 100% of the other days?
Correction. Turkey is an aphrodisiac. That I do know.
Also, it's very close to Christmas as a holiday, and it makes no sense that the two holidays we all travel for are within like a month of one another.
I got you with that one. As an Indian person, I'll tell you this right now. I got Halloween. We're protesting that because of the freaking costumes and the Pocahontas crap. Then, right, we got the horrendous holiday of Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day, thank you. Yeah, we got to celebrate that genocide. Then we got Thanksgiving with the parade. Thank God we're not part elf because we'd be dead by Christmas. You know what I want to say?
What?
I think Andy Cohen needs to do a reality show on me. And it should be he as everybody else, but he should call it The Chiefs of Broadway.
The Chiefs. But does Thanksgiving bother you as a holiday?
No, not really, because I get to eat and I have a day off. You know, we look at, you know, my family fights and we look at television shows and, you know, football games and we do all of that type of stuff. But it bothers me. It's the up to that bothers me. You know what I mean? It's not the orgasm doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the foreplay of Thanksgiving with a bad lover who doesn't know what to do with his hands. That is what bothers me.
Is that the pilgrim hat?
That's a pilgrim hat. It never works. You know, and what happens, it's all these other things. You know, you have everything. You celebrate everything. And then, you know, we get to Thanksgiving and it's, you know, I mean, give me a break. And meanwhile, you know, we have a parade. And every year, and believe me, I did the parade. Me and my family did the parade. We did everything. I even danced at the Rainbow Room, right, in an Indian outfit, right, to make $500 to pay for my daughter's private school. And everyone had the fake little hats on and the feathers. And they said, woo, woo, woo. Oh, yes. And the table was as big as this. So, you know.
The woo, woo, woo bothers you.
The woo, woo, woo bothers me. You know, and the woo, woo always happens. Like we were talking earlier, you know, what are the words that bother us all the time? Please, you know, it's like the bottom of the totem pole, right? That freaking bothers me. You know, let's have a powwow. Oh, come on. And the other one is, oh, it's like, let's circle the wagons. That's the one I can't stand. And it's, but, you know, it's like you could see what happens is you'll be enjoying a movie and you'll really enjoy the movie. Then the Indian joke happens. And you just don't know what to do. So you wind up laughing and then you wind up embracing it and Thanksgiving, you know, and loving it. You know, we hate Peter Pan. They always have Tiger Lily. They always make it politically correct. And we all the Indians know all the dances and everything because we don't got nothing.
Trump recently took to calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas.
Oh, yes.
Do you find that that's insulting to Native Americans, insulting to women, insulting to Pocahontas? Where's your Where's your head at?
All of the above.
Where's your head
at? All of the above. The man doesn't do anything for native rights, right? So this is what he does, right? Meanwhile, you know, we had people fighting at Standing Rock, really fighting for Standing Rock, for their oil rights, for their rights as human beings. We're being hosed down, right? And not in a good way. We got dogs at us, and this is what he says. And the problem is what it comes down to is people think that native people don't exist. I'll give you an example. Okay, it's the Martian theory. The Martian theory to me is that you could do a play, you could do a movie about a Martian, and you do this play about little green Martians or whatever. What happens is a Martian comes down from space one day and says, I really don't like this play or movie you did about me. And you're totally shocked that Martian exists. That's what it's like being an Indian. They turn around and they say, oh, we didn't know there were so many Indians. We didn't know Indians existed. Does that really offend you? And it happens all the time. So, you know, when Trump, out of all of his things that he did, the Pocahontas comment made no sense to me at all. You know, and the other thing that people have to remember, too, is Native peoples, and I say this with an S, because collectively, peoples were different nations. We're over 4,000 nations, with over 4,000 languages, over 4,000 different ways of doing things. But meanwhile, you clump us all together, and you do a play, you do a movie, and you say, well, we asked an Indian, what'd you do? You dragged an Indian from the street and said, is this a good play or movie? So this happens constantly, and that's the constant fight.
On this Thanksgiving, what is your parting message to people listening as we mark this holiday that is ostensibly about the relationship between Native peoples and pilgrims?
Fight. Fight. If you're a Native person, you're listening to this, say your piece. Stand up. If you're a person of color, a woman, stand up. Say what you have to say. When someone says something about a Native person, fight. We need to fight. All Native people who hear this, let's fight. We have to, our voice has to be heard, and invisibility will kill us. We have to be out there fighting, and that's what I will say for Thanksgiving. And thank you very much, you wild Caucasians.
Okay, guys, give it up for Muriel Borsch-Tarrant.
Don't go anywhere. This is Love It or Leave It, and there's more on the way.
Guys, please welcome back our panel, Francesca, David, Andy. Now for a game we call, in Soviet Russia, Ad Falls for You. Would somebody out there like to play the game? Hi, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Peggy.
Peggy?
Yes.
Oh, I like that name, Peggy.
Thanks.
Where are you from, Peggy?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Technically on Long Island. You know, technically. Peggy, here's how this game works. Our panelists each have headlines, and it'll be up to you to suss out whether that headline is from Fox News, Breitbart, or what has recently been revealed to be a fake Russian troll ad on Facebook. So it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough.
And the interesting thing is, hey, these things all kind of sound like one thing, you know? That's the message of the game. And Trump is president, so you don't need to be subtle anymore. You can just say what the message of a game is.
Perfect.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Let's play.
All face coverings should be banned in every state across America.
Was that a Breitbart headline, a Fox News headline, or a Russian ad?
I'm going to say Breitbart.
Wrong. This is, Peggy, I want you to know something. This is the first truly hard game we've ever played. Like, it's actually, you are going to struggle through this whole game. And that's going to be part of it, too.
Awesome.
That was, in fact, a Russian ad. David, you're up next.
Were Obama and Hillary founders of ISIS? You bet.
Russian ad?
That was Breitbart. Andy, you're up.
Anti-Trump thugs shout Viva Mexico while burning Trump banner.
Fox.
Yes. Look at that. Little help from the crowd. We'll allow it. We'll allow it. Francesca's up with the next clue.
Can I just say, I feel like this game is going to come back to haunt me.
Why?
I feel like someone's going to like edit this together. I don't know. All right. Here's my headline. Hey, Black Lives Matter. Stop terrorizing our cities.
Francesca.
Fuck.
Why would you say that?
Oh my God.
It was the game.
I am Francesca. Honestly stunned to hear you voice such an opinion.
Wow. So, Francesca, you're anti-Black Lives Matter? Wow.
When did you first... I mean, is this... This is so strange.
You, like, wow. My Twitter mentions are a dumpster fire. Like, all the time, and they're just going to get worse. I hope you win, Peggy. Run away. Go for it.
Can you repeat that one?
No. You know what, Peggy? Take your old lady name and get the fuck out of here.
Peggy, I didn't know that someone so hostile and anti-Black Lives Matter was going to be on our panel. But you know, that's the thing. You don't know. And I'm sorry.
You're militant in your anti-Black Lives Matter.
Peggy,
you guys are ruining my brand. Like ruining.
Peggy, I will read it. Because my brand is already in tatters. Hey, Black Lives Matter, stop terrorizing our cities.
Russian ad.
Fox News. That was a Fox News headline.
Don't act surprised. What? Whoa,
David,
really?
You're up.
The establishment thinks they can treat us like stupid sheep, but they are wrong.
It's surprisingly hard.
Fox News?
No. Oh, it was a Russian ad. Peggy, here's the thing that sucks. Until this point, 100% of the games we've ever played were funny because they were easy and jokes. And then you volunteer and you have such a great disposition. You seem so kind and guileless. You raised your hand. Your name is Peggy, like you're from another era. And then here we are, and you're just getting trounced. And frankly, all these people are embarrassed for you.
I know.
Just kidding, Peggy. Peggy, the crowd is on your side. That's the boost you needed. You're the Rudy of this event. Okay, that's enough. We all love Peggy. Did we ever give her the answer? It was a Russian ad. I think we did. Andy, you're up.
Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden hinted at Obama assassination.
Breitbart.
Yes. Francesca, you're up.
What voters know about Hillary Clinton? She is a crook.
Fox.
She got it.
Hillary Clinton is the co-author of Obama's anti-police and anti-constitutional propaganda.
Russian ad.
Yes.
Wow.
Pretty good.
You're getting good at this. Was Hillary Clinton involved in a boating accident?
Fox News.
That was a trick, Peggy. You couldn't have gotten it right. That was a Google-suggested search.
There is a new coloring book called Buff Bernie, a coloring book for Bernie-acts.
Breitbart.
That was a Russian ad. The weirdest one. And it's like, what's your game? What's your game, Moscow? Who is this for? And it seems like it worked. Peggy, I want you to know that it's been amazing to watch you evolve from someone who wasn't getting questions right to someone who was just nailing the game. David, you're up.
Sanders' win with help from Arab and Muslim Americans is no surprise.
Breitbart?
Russian ad. You got cocky, Peggy. Andy?
Was Bernie Sanders a draft dodger?
Fox.
Google auto suggest. That's the last one of those. Final two questions.
See, I told you Bernie Sanders was a fraud.
Russian ad.
Breitbart. And finally,
Bernie Sanders is one thick bee.
Peggy, I'll just let you, it was Google.
Okay.
Guys, I have great news. I've consulted with the judges, and Peggy won. And for those of you out there who were concerned, yes, she gets the linens. The gift card.
Linens.
Which is very exciting. Wait, I want to give Peggy the microphone one more time because, Peggy, thank you for playing.
Thank you.
Was it ultimately something you're glad you volunteered for?
I've waited my whole life for this.
That was cool. All right, guys, give it up for Peggy. Thank you guys on the panel for doing that. That was great. I think Peggy and I are going to be friends after this. When we come back, the rant wheel. And we're back. Now for a segment we call the rant wheel. Here's how it works. The wheel spins, and where it lands, we talk about it. This week on the rant wheel, we have LA types who mock New York weather. Guys taking out their penises at work. Something that's been in the news. 280 characters, Fox and Friends, Meek Mill's judge. You guys see that? Nuts. Superhero movies, and Tom Steyer's impeachment ads, and an audience suggestion. Let's spin the wheel. It has landed on Tom Steyer's impeachment ads, and I think that there should be a clip.
I'm Tom Steyer, and like you, I'm a citizen who knows it's up to us to do something. It's why I'm funding this effort to raise our voices together and demand that elected officials take a stand on impeachment. Join us and tell your member of Congress that they have a moral responsibility to stop doing what's political and start doing what's right.
Yeah, you can applaud that if you want. What a fucking waste of money. I gotta tell you, we, you know, on the right, they've got the Mercers and they've got the Koch brothers, and those people are spending their money building media organizations, gerrymandering, funding all kinds of nefarious shit. And our guys, they're putting up ads calling for impeachment. It was like $10 million. Hey, how about you register some voters? You know? What is this? What is this?
Yeah, I think what I don't like about this is the tone is all wrong. Like, this feels like a proof of life video. he's pleading. He needs to be angry. Like, I want to see fire and like passion and like cursing.
He's also very parched. He needs a beverage, a sip of something.
millions and millions of dollars of ads saying, sign a petition to impeach Trump. What do you do with that? Okay, great. Look at all those signatures. That's not how power works. We're not gonna impeach Trump until we win some fucking elections. So, and I'm sorry, but making your title, American citizen. Come on, Tom. Get your head in the game, all right?
It's like trying to appeal to his base somehow, like the straightest, whitest man we could find, like, as if this was going to change their minds. Like, oh, American citizens say that? Yeah, that's why I'm totally about impeaching Trump now.
Is Tom Steyer a public figure that I should know who he is?
I have never seen this man.
Well, I think that's
his Twitter game is sick.
I think he should date Vicky Gunvalson.
He's a billionaire.
Maybe.
How did How did Tom Sawyer make his money? Hedge funds. Oh, terrific. He's a very wealthy man. He clearly wants to get his name out there. He's clearly one of the many billionaires thinking if Trump can do it, well, why not fucking me? But this is a vanity project. If you're going to spend millions of dollars in politics, there are so many better uses for it, and we just got to get our billionaires. We need billionaires to match their billionaires. And right now, I don't know. These impeachment ads are not cutting it. That's it. Let's spin it again. It has landed on L.A. types who mock New York weather, and I believe this was a suggestion.
You know what? It was, and it's super basic, and it's just, this couldn't be the more basic thing. But my feeling is, if I lived in L.A., I would just turn into, I think I would be addicted to crystal meth because there's nowhere to go. And the truth is, I just can't believe that all these years, I've lived in New York City for 27 years and have been dealing with people on the phone in LA who every single time I talk to them have to make a crack about the weather. I don't care. And by the way, I like a season. I want to put on a coat. I don't care if it's 72. That's what you have going on. That's fine. I'm busy. I have other things that I'm thinking of. And just, you know, go back to your 72-ness.
I mean,
I know it's a very basic time. I know I'm like back to 1974 here, but I can't get over that it's still happening.
It's true. I have a theory, and well, you live in LA, so
sorry.
He's New York.
I think people in LA get commission for getting people to move out there, and that they're all miserable. And every single time I go out there for work, everyone's like, "Isn't it great? Don't you want to move here? Do we have a top down? It's January." I'm like, I know. Like, I'm not convinced. And I think that they're all trying to get everyone else to move out there so that once they get there, they can all be miserable together.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I kind of fucks with LA, and none of y'all have to move there. I'm totally good there without you. And also, it's fucking cold here.
Yeah.
But you have to look hot when it's cold. Like boots? Come on, like boots are hot.
Yeah, right.
You have to
guess
look
what?
Hot.
I'm rocking a ski sweater, and I feel really good about it.
It's true. No, you guys have mastered it. You're both super hot, but I'm just cold.
I want to say two things. L.A. is great, and you should all move there. The second thing I was going to say about L.A. is, for all their talk, our talk, about the weather, man, that temperature drops to like 64 and all these people have scarves and sweaters. Like, ooh, it's brisk. I'm going to break this out because they're desperate for the change, Andy.
Desperate.
They want to put a sweater on. People walking around LA, it's 64 degrees out. The sun is shining. I'm in shorts and these people have like shawls, you know, and they have those ski sweaters that kind of go all the way up. You know,
because you look hot when it's cold. All of that stuff is... It looks really cute.
Let's spin it again. It has landed on superhero movies. How much is going to be enough? How much? Does it ever end? Honestly, I hope it doesn't.
I hope it doesn't because it means I never have to go to another movie in my life. I don't go to movies anymore because they're all superhero movies and I could give a shit.
Honestly, though, I wish I could say the same, but I'll go see a Chris Pine, a Chris Pratt, a Chris Evans.
That's not what I want to see those guys doing. But also...
wait, which one did I miss? Hemsworth, oh my God. Yeah, wouldn't
but
say
also,
I was missing it. What?
Is Spider-Man the greatest story ever told? Why is there a new Spider-Man movie every 2.5 years?
That is weird. It is
Why
weird.
Why do we need that origin movie every 2.5 years?
I am sick of finding out how Bruce Wayne's parents died.
Right.
Every time, and there go the pearls, you know?
I do think that is why we need to keep making them to get past. What we're finally learning is that you don't have to start from the beginning every time. You can treat them like comic books and just start somewhere in the middle and maybe we'll look at it and maybe not and it doesn't fucking matter.
Or you can watch Riverdale on the CW, which is what I do. And, you know,
is it good?
It's like I've porn. Yeah.
I mean,
not really. But
Andy, you know, you are on such high ground saying, I don't go see superhero movies. And you let everyone here think, like, because he goes to plays. Because he's taking in, he's at the Met. He's at Lincoln Center. You know, he's taking in
something
really.
Those are reasons why as well.
But also Riverdale.
Yes.
And Riverdale is hot Archie. That's what Riverdale is?
Yes, it is white hot Archie. They're all there on Riverdale, and they're all having sex.
I'm totally going to watch this show now.
That's, there are Josie and the Pussycats. It's everything.
So Housewives of Riverdale? Is that
yes.
next? Okay.
Let's close with an audience suggestion. You know, here's the thing, Andy. I do this every time, and it's a wave of incomprehensible talking. Judicial nominees. That's a good one. That's a good one. I don't know if you saw this, but Trump, that this person was recently passed through the committee on a party line vote. The first person to receive, I believe it's a, don't quote me, but roughly speaking, a unanimous unqualified from the Bar Association. He has no business being a judge. He is not qualified. I think he's barely a lawyer. But who are the anti-Trump Republicans who lined up behind this person? It was Jeff Flake who voted for him and Ben Sasse who voted for him. What exactly do these people think it means to be in any way anti-Trump or to have any integrity during this period of time? Is that not one thing that you could do, Jeff Flake, who has said, I'm going to retire, but I'm going to do it with incredible gusto. Oh, my retirement is going to be the bravest quitting of a job you've ever seen. He's filling the court, guys. Gorsuch, all the way down, he's getting a lot of judges. What a low point to end the show on.
Yeah, can we get a better, a funnier audience suggestion? Louis C.K. is not a funnier suggestion.
Louis
but
C.K.?
But I can go off on Louis C.K. for 2 seconds.
Okay.
I'm tired of us giving out cookies for dudes doing the bare minimum. People are like, what a good apology. Fuck that dude. That was not a good apology. The word I apologize was not fucking in that apology, that quote-unquote apology. I'll give his publicist some props for, like, reading the room and actually trying to take some responsibility. But it really felt like another, like, masturbatory, no pun intended, exercise. And him being like, oh, these women looked up to me. And so I took advantage of them. And I thought asking, you know, if I could jerk off first made it not so bad. And it's like 2 weeks ago, bro, you were denying this. So fuck you. You don't get a cookie for coming out and saying that you know you did the wrong thing. I'm not impressed.
Yeah,
at all.
And yeah, and that's the other thing too. It's like there is no apology, but also you didn't seem to be circumspect about it until after the New York Times wrote an expose about it.
No, the whole time he was like, well, I'm not going to address the rumors. Everybody has talked about this forever. It's been an open secret and
the most open secret.
Yeah. And now, and what I think what really is the worst is like looking back on his material and realizing that he was doing all of this stuff to get like head pats for being like a woke white guy who like understands it's hard to be a woman. Like, fuck you, dude. He was telling jokes about himself. He was going up and telling jokes about how hard it was to be a woman because guys are assholes, and he was talking about himself, and he was getting millions of dollars for it, and it's just, ugh, I'm so pissed off about that.
That had the high energy of a way to end the show, but was very dark. You know, it was ultimately a dark topic.
Like, my heart is, like, pounding really
hard. I thought it was triumphant.
I'm, like, pissed.
Yeah, I thought it was triumphant.
Thank you. Don't let people congratulate him. Like, that is the bare minimum. He does not get some special, like, participatory badge for recognizing that he did the wrong thing. Like, fuck him.
Get him.
I suppose I'll close only by saying, in a year of incredible shamelessness, it has closed with a transcendent moment of people finally being held accountable for years and decades of shameless behavior. And perhaps that is a hopeful note to close out this Thanksgiving show, I want to thank our incredible panel, Francesca Ramsey, David Diggs, Andy Cohen. I want to thank Muriel Borsch-Tarrant, and I want to thank the Vineyard Sounds, which should be reemerging at any moment. I'm just staying for this. Look at these guys. The Vineyard Sound. And they have a Vineyard look.